We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back to the second guest show. Mike DeTellier, Bobby Hebert, live from the Silver Slipper Casino. Beachside right here in Hancock County, Mississippi. Come on by and visit us. Bobby J and I will be on until 8 o'clock tonight, and we've got some great guests coming up. One of them is on the line now, the voice of the Tennessee Titans, old buddy Mike Keith. Mike, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Mike D, it is my pleasure to be with you. Thank you for asking.
Mike, was a great run. It came to the end yesterday, but if I would have told you back in September this team's going to the AFC Championship game, I don't think anybody would have believed it.
I think you're probably right, especially in early October when we were 2-4 and
yeah,
we couldn't score. But, you know, a quarterback change, an offensive line improvement, a team that consistently got better even into the playoffs and gained confidence. It was an incredible run. You know, only four teams have started the season 2-4 and made a conference championship game. One of them was the 2002 Titans. Another of them, this Titans team that fell yesterday. This one was considerably more fun than even the one in 2002 for us.
Now, Mike, what were the Chiefs doing compared to when, because that wasn't that long ago, when you look at the game in November and what occurred, and obviously, like Coach Vrabel said, you got off to a fast start. You have a double-digit lead. And then Pat Mahomes working his magic. But what was, in your opinion, Derrick Henry was held to 69 yards and 19 carries after basically rushing for almost 600 yards in the past three games. What did you see that the Chiefs did? And how would you break that down, considering that he was, like, stomping the previous teams, but not so much this game?
Two things, Bobby. First of all, you start with the fact that the Chiefs made no mistakes. They lost two field goal opportunities in the game in Nashville. One of them on a bad snap, another one was blocked. They also saw the Titans pick up a fumble and Rashawn Evans returned it for a touchdown. So they made no mistakes at all. The second part of it is, their offense in taking over the game took the Titans' offense out of it. They kept the ball. They got the lead. They scored 28 straight points. And because the Titans could not stay on the field and because the game only featured 9 total possessions, Tennessee couldn't stick with the running game. And so even though we were at a point in the first half where with 6:39 to go, Derrick Henry already had a total of 14 carries. He got only 5 carries after that, largely due to the Chiefs' offense.
Mike, I think the surprise for everybody was the play of Ryan Tannehill. You know, he just came in here, and the one thing, and you and I talked about this, it was he felt more comfortable. He was more decisive with his throws downfield. That we didn't see a lot of that in Miami, but he became much, much stronger. And man, listen, it wasn't like the yo-yo where, man, I want to throw it, and almost like a pullback. He was making those throws, and we saw the emergence of A.J. During this season. And he had a terrific rookie season for a wide receiver, but it was really Ryan Tannehill that was the story here, that when the season started, it almost was like storybook had this team been able to win and get to Super Bowl Sunday to see what's happened with Tannehill.
Yeah, you know, I think the pressure being off him was a big thing. I think that that stood out. He sort of had all those things go on in Miami, and it was just – it always seemed like it was crazy there. And so finally they got him in a situation in Tennessee that it was stable. The other thing, too, is Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator. Arthur Smith and Ryan Tannehill really developed a bond, and Tannehill was calling a lot of his own plays at the line. Obviously, there were things they had gone over during the week, but he makes a lot of fantastic choices. And I know you said when he came out of Texas A&M, he was really smart.
Yep.
You know, he was talking about being an orthopedic surgeon at one point in his life. This guy could really make the proper checks and the proper calls. And along with the offensive line, I think Derrick Henry really benefited a lot from Tannehill calling the plays at the line. It was an offensive coordinator and a quarterback totally in sync.
Now, Mike, when you look at the Titans and the fan base, 9-7, and you get hot, you go on a run in the playoffs, and you're one game away from the Super Bowl. Well, what is their mindset right now going forward? Are they optimistic? And obviously, you know, the way a team is structured, I always take the approach, did you win or did you lose the game? But you have to be impressed when you considered who they beat to get even to the point for the AFC Championship. When you beat the Patriots, and they're the 21st century team a couple of decades, and then the Ravens, how they were structured. Boy, the Titans got to be proud. And I even told Saints fans, look, we were down 14-0 on the road, and we end up coming back and win, but that was no Derrick Henry. So are the fans optimistic going forward the way they structured?
Yes. And, you know, it's a funny thing about the Titans, first team in NFL history to go 9-7 four straight
years.
Whoa.
But, you know, one of only four teams with four straight winning records. So the fan base through the regular season was tepid. They're like, this is great, this is fun. They enjoyed all the offense in the second half of the season because the Titans really haven't had much offense since Steve McNair. And so they were okay. Well, then you go to New England and you eliminate Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. And the fan base says, what? What just happened? And then you follow that up by beating a team that cost you two Super Bowls, the Baltimore Ravens, who were massive favorites in the game, and now the fan base is completely back on board. They were excited about yesterday. They are not broken by the loss. They're excited about the offseason. Those two wins were program changers in terms of the energy of the fan base. And the organization, hey, listen, this football team needed to prove they could take the next step.
That's right.
And, Bobby, they did with those wins.
One of the things, too, is I always tell this to Bobby, that the GM there, John Robinson, got his start in Thibodaux, Louisiana. He was a GA at Nicholls State. Then he became the linebacker coach. And I remember him telling me, hey, I got a new job. And I was like, what job you got? He says, I'm going to be a regional scout for the New England Patriots. So, you know, his startup was right here on the bayou, so to speak, in Thibodaux. And what a great job John has done in piecing this team together.
He's got a big job in this offseason, too. Right now we have roughly 20 free agents. So he's got some cap room. He's going to pick 29th. John is fun to watch in terms of the wheeling and dealing. And so I'm going to be interested to see what he does in what is his fifth offseason. He's awfully good at what he does. And Amy Adams Strunk has done a lot of great things as controlling owner of this team. The best thing she did was hire John Robinson.
One of the things is, hopefully you get a full year from Jeffrey Simmons. Because I'm telling you, that guy is going to be a difference maker one day in the NFL, the way he can play up front.
You know, he did a nice job overall, but admitted, you know, his knee's still sore and he's still working through some things. I mean, structurally, he's fine. But overall, and his recovery was incredible, by the way. But, you know, he's like, I sure would like an offseason to train, to be a little lighter. And I'm interested to see him in year two because he was pretty doggone good this year. I have a feeling you're right. He'll be an enforcer next year.
Now, Michael, what is your take on Pat Mahomes? Because I look at this, the difference, and why the Chiefs are in the Super Bowl. He had 11 postseason touchdowns, not a single interception, and then he led the Chiefs in rushing the last 2 weeks. To me, I heard him quote, I think, and he was doing an interview when he said, well, it's either double coverage and didn't necessarily panic, and he would just utilize his feet. And I thought that that was a big part of what they did to come back and take the lead and keep the momentum, that when you look at it all of a sudden, that he had now, I was somewhat surprised by this because I know the Titans were aware that he has the mobility, but eight carries for 53 yards.
Yeah, and two of those were kneel downs. Right. So, yeah. I mean, he tore us up with the running. The touchdown at the end of the first half totally changed the ball game. What do you do with him? I mean, there's a John Elway quality to this player.
Yep.
Based on the arm strength, the ability to throw it from anywhere. There's so many plays that he makes that I know his coaches are going, no, no, no. And right. Then after it's completed, they're like, yes, yes, yes. Yeah. To me, he's Michael Jordan. And as you watch him, even as the other broadcaster, he threw for 446 against us on November the 10th. And then yesterday, you know, had 350 yards of total offense before the kneel downs. I mean, the guy's spectacular. He's so great for the league. He's a bright kid. He studies hard. He plays his rear end off. I mean, if you don't have a great day against him, he's gonna take you to school. And unfortunately for us yesterday, he took us to school. He's special.
And you know, Mike, we were talking about this early in the show. I'm talking with Mike Dettillier and another Mike. And then are we looking at, like, okay, how can you describe him? You know, you look at his arm strength like John Elway and, you know, all the quarterbacks who have mobility and the arm strength. I'm telling you, he reminds me of Brett Favre, how he ad-libs, but he don't make as many mistakes. I think of Favre at times like, whoa, that wasn't planned. And like you were saying, no, 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 oh, good play.
The improvisational skills.
The ad-lib that he does, but just protects the football a little more than Brett did. And Brett's my good friend, but it just seems like along those lines, and you can't coach that, but it just seems like at a young age, he is so disciplined to put it on his shoulders and be able to ad-lib and come out on top.
Well, my former broadcast partner, Pat Ryan, who played for the Jets for years, used to talk about Brett Favre, and every once in a while he would flock shoot, that he would do something he shouldn't do with the ball because he's Brett Favre. This kid never does that. There's never a throw from him that you say, what was that all about?
Right.
Every throw there. Even when he's on the run or something's being improvised, you can tell he's looked at things and said, if I have to go to my left, wait for this play, it will be there. I mean, you know, his dad being a big league pitcher and LaTroy Hawkins being his godfather, this is a kid who came into the league knowing how to be a pro. And I don't think his smarts get enough attention. Because, I mean, this is a kid who takes it seriously like a Breeze, like a Manning, like a Brady. I mean, you love how committed to this game this player is. And, you know, you hear the stories when he does his endorsement shoots for the Diamond Company or whatever. The only way he will do it is if there a place, is there a place and is there time for him to get his workout in.
Whoa.
And that. That type of discipline, that's Peyton Manning-esque. Yep. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
That's things being important to you. That's a guy, regardless of position, I want on my football team that it is so important to, and when it's your quarterback, it's really beautiful.
One of the things, Mike, I'll always remember, he comes to the Manning Passing Academy, okay, and there's probably 40 guys sitting down waiting to get interviewed. He sat for 40 minutes. No one interviewed him. I grabbed my cameraman. I said, that's who we go and interview. And he was like, man, that's the guy, LSU. Man, they beat the tar out of him when they played him in the bowl game. I said, no, I've seen him throw. Let's go interview him. He was so gracious. He did one interview that day. He did it for us. And no one else interviewed him. He was so good during the interview. And he talked about, you know, that him being able to throw a 90-mile-an-hour fastball and everything else. But it, I asked him, what do you take out of coming here to the Manning camp? And he said, I just want to soak it in on what makes Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, the type players they are. He said, it's almost like osmosis. I want to soak in what they do and try to emulate it. And it's funny you bring that up.
Well, I went back and I read your write-up of him in the 2017 M&D draft guide. And you were dead on about everything, about all of the characteristics. And, man, you've got to credit John Dorsey and Brett Veach and Andy Reid for seeing what he could be. As my broadcast partner now, Dave McGinnis, calls him a generational talent that they put into that incubator for the 2017 season and let him grow. And, I mean, the guy's 27-8 as a starter.
That's unbelievable.
He's phenomenal. That's winning.
Mike. Well, Mike, you talk about that draft, and, Mike, we remember we were doing the draft. The Saints and Sean Payton were going to take Pat Mahomes.
Yeah.
Now think about this. And Andy
Reid got a little bit of somebody whispered in his ear, Andy jumped him.
Went
ahead.
So, well, that would have been scary to see him in Sean Payton's offense, too. I think Andy Reid has done a great job letting the kid do what he does, and I think Sean Payton would have done the same thing.
Mike, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Man, we really appreciate it. It was a great run this year with the Titans. And, Mike, long after you have shed that mortal coil, you will be in NFL history for that call for the Music City Miracle.
Oh, that's awesome.
Long after Mike's gone, that call will always be there.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
All right, Mike
Keith, the voice of the Tennessee Titans for so many years. And if you watch that play and hear their home call of it, man, you'll never forget it.
Wade Phillips is still shocked that what happened.
And says that it was a forward pass. Wycheck threw that one.
Frank
Wycheck. We'll be back with more Second Guess right here on the Big 870. Here on the Second Guest Show, Mike DeTellier, Bobby Hebert, live from the Silver Slipper Casino beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. In a few minutes, we'll have on with us Ross Dellinger, who covers done a lot of stories on LSU over the last year or so. So we have Ross there. Ross, you all with us, brother?
Hey, Mike,
man, I thought you were coming on a little later, man. It's great to have you. We appreciate it. Man, I know you're working for Sports Illustrated, but, man, near a man that's living on the bayou, man. You almost got that Cajun stamp on you all the time you done spent down there. But, Ross, what a great story, right? Thinking back, when Coach O got the job, I think you were there that night. We're in La Rose. It is pouring down rain. It's cold at night. And I'll never forget, he stood up and he said, listen, I got a lot of people that don't believe in me. I know you guys do. But very shortly, we're going to be playing for a national championship. Man, the crowd went crazy and all. But how many of them actually believed that night? That part, is kind of a split decision. But, man, look the run he made. And they may win another one. Ross, they'll never win one like this. And the fashion that they did it. Never win it like this.
No, they won't. It was incredible to watch. And like you said, it felt like I was back on the LSU beat, man. I mean, I couldn't get away from them. So, but that's okay, because it was the best story in college football this year. It was incredible to follow. And you're right, I was there that night in La Rose with all those Cajuns crammed into a building and eating, drinking as much beer as there was and on the bayou. And
we didn't run out. It wasn't like Atlanta.
Didn't
run out.
It was incredible to kind of think back to that time and look at what they did. It's pretty awesome run, and it was fun to kind of be a part of it and follow it.
Now, Ross, when I look at that special season, different people have commented. You can look at the records, but To me, I don't know about players, but when you talk about a team, how can this not be the greatest season ever and the best team? And what I mean by that, looking at LSU, what, 726 points scored that hadn't been done since, you got to go back to 1936. Then you look at all the top players winning all the postseason awards. And then you reference to the fact that LSU beat seven top 10 teams and four top five teams, which no team has ever done. So when you're talking about special seasons, how can this not be the best of the best when you look at that resume and what was accomplished?
Yeah, I mean, you just look at the, as you mentioned, the numbers and just the numbers in general, you know, seven top 10 teams, nobody's ever done that. You know, and how they blew out. Yeah, and how they blew out their competition. Look at the postseason and what they did. I think they won the three combined postseason games all against top four teams by a combined like 79 points. I mean, it's just it's remarkable. And you know, I'm over here at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, and I was just at the bar. I know y'all are real shocked about that, but
yeah,
there's a discussion. There was
ain't
a discussion
nothing
about
ain't nothing wrong with that.
There's
a discussion hear no
about
argument.
Who the best team was, you know. And we were talking about the 01 Hurricanes,
yep,
the 95 Huskers. And, you know,
right,
if you're just mentioned with that group, that's pretty good. And LSU's got a good argument to say that they're better than both those teams.
And, Ross, you look at how about I don't know, Joe Burrow. I mean, I know he didn't sell his soul to the devil, but that one season, to me, that's unbelievable. 60 touchdown passes, and then you look at the LSU Tiger fan base, that LSU quarterback threw for 59 touchdowns in the previous four seasons combined. So here's four seasons combined,
yeah,
and he passed all that. That, to me, Joe Burrow was like unconscious. He was too cool for school. Wasn't he like Joe Cool and smoking that stogie in the locker room? To me, that was like perfect. I mean, nothing fazed him. I mean, he was unbelievable what he did for LSU, and I don't know how you can even put it in words. You just would have had to visually witness it.
And Ross, he can back this up. He's got a unique personality. Not a lot of quarterbacks have his type personality. He's quirky, which makes him a great fit for LSU. And for Louisiana, he's got a few quirks to him that, yeah, sometimes you don't see that a lot in quarterbacks. But one thing he's got, toughness and, man, a focus like a laser to get things done.
Yeah, he does. You know, he is quirky. He's an odd guy. He's got some interesting interests, you know, outside of football. And he's got some interesting ideas outside of football and some just thoughts on the world, you know, you know, that picture of him with the cigar on the couch is kind of reminds me of that picture of Joe Namath with the cigar.
Yeah.
I think when he was with the Jets, you know,
yep,
he's got the cigar and he's sitting on that chair in the locker room. And that picture of Joe on the couch will kind of be immortalized forever, like the Namath picture. It was pretty fun to follow him, and he's kind of a weird guy, but as you said, he
fits right in
football. I mean, yeah,
he fits,
I mean,
in Louisiana, believe me.
He was as focused on football as anybody. He spent, just because he had already graduated, you know, and he had just those online classes, I mean, he was in that football building just as much as the assistant coaches, and it showed.
Now, Ross, I want your honest opinion. You look at LSU, they erupted for 628 yards against Clemson after falling behind 17-7. Then they went on a 35-8 run. Were you a little nervous when it was 17-7? Oh, this is going to go down to the wire, considering LSU's never been behind double digits. Or were you like, they got this in the bag? I have to be honest, I was like, man, I'm looking at my wife and said, I just hope they win. I don't know what's going to happen. We just somehow got to win this game. Boy, but I guess the confidence I was lacking, they didn't lack it, because when you erupt against the number one defense in the Clemson Tigers, number one scoring defense, number one a passing defense, and you put up 628 yards, and look at the points, bottom line is, the question I'm asking you, when it was 17-7, you said, LSU got this in the bag, or what was your approach right there?
No, I certainly didn't think that it would be a 17-point LSU win. It felt like a game that was going to come down to the wire. But you know what? You talked about confidence and stuff. Look, I mean, I've been around a lot of teams and covered a lot of teams. I'm not sure that I've been around a team more confident in their abilities than that team. And they let you know it, too, starting with Joe Burrow. I mean, they were not scared to tell you that they were better than you and they're about to kick your you-know-what, you know? And so from that standpoint, when they were down like that, I knew that they probably, and I asked some players after the game, you know, what did anybody rally you guys? You know, you're down big, and did anybody rally you?
Right.
They're like, no, we knew we were going to come back and kick their butt. That's kind of what we've done all season. And so they had just this confidence and kind of boastful way about them, like I've kind of never seen in a team.
One of the things, Ross, that, you know, Joe Burrow, the surprise, I remember at Manning camp, you know, and asking, man, we're going to score 45 to 50 points a game. It was like, what? You know, you got to be kidding me. You know, when Joe says something, you learn to pay attention. Because, you know, sometimes he doesn't say a lot, but when he says something, he really means
right.
it. But other than Joe, the biggest surprise, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You talk about a guy that we've never gotten as many texts or people online. Man, when they going to start playing Tyron Davis-Price more? When they going to start playing John Emery more? When they going to give Chris Curry a shot?
What?
And look what little Clyde did. Man, you know, and he was unbelievable as a runner,
look at the
receiver.
Alabama game.
But where he really made his mark, and Coach O told me this, Mike, he can pass protect. Man, a lot of times you see that guy coming right up the middle, and he just absolutely will wheelbarrow right off the bat, and he gave Joe a little bit more time to throw the football. What a great season for Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Yeah, it was fun. And, you know, I don't spend a ton of time real close to the players, you know, when they're in the uniform and stuff, you know, down the field. But for the SEC Championship game, I went down the field, and that was the game actually he was hurt, you know, and everybody was wondering if he'd play or not. He played a little bit. They didn't really need him for much. But I was down there pregame, and he walked by me, and I kind of did a double take. His waist down to the toes, man. I mean, he is built. It's just incredible. This huge, thick trunk on him, and you know why he can make the moves that he can make and kind of throw tacklers off and the way he runs. As you look at that trunk, man, I was just talking to somebody here from LSU that works over there at the Senior Bowl here, and they just told me about Clyde's strength on his lower half, and it is insane to see him up close, man. His thighs are the size of probably my waist. I mean, it's just wild, and he's been really incredible. When he gets the ball in open space, he's going to break that first tackle, you know it, you know, and he might break the second too.
Now, Ross, I remember in August we were talking about where Coach O, he goes on the Tiger Tour. And that, boy, I think y'all going to see the vast improvement in the most improved unit being the offensive line. But now, all of a sudden, four to five guys are gone.
That's the biggest thing to rebuild.
Isn't that the biggest question again, then, the offensive line, to help out Miles Brennan or whoever's at QB and the whole offensive scheme?
Yeah, you know, that was kind of – I know they won the Joe Moore Award, but that was kind of in I don't know, overshadowed unit this year because you had the receivers making so many great plays, Joe Burrow making so many great plays, and you had the talk of the defense and all that. And it was kind of overshadowed of how good of a job that those guys did. And as you all know, you need an O-line before you need anything else, the foundation of a team, the foundation of an offense. So that is something that going into this next year – certainly is probably a little bit of a weak point for LSU, somewhere that I'm sure Coach O has his concerns about because, you know, when you look at the whole team, you know, the quarterback and O-line, they're going to be a lot of new guys there in those positions, and that's kind of the foundation of it. And it'll be interesting to watch how that one kind of develops and the new guys that come in, the freshmen, how many are going to get a crack, you know, at those positions.
One of the things that surfaced over the weekend, Ross, was the name of Bo Pelini possibly returning back to LSU. You think about it at that time, and I'll never forget Jimmy Johnson telling me this years ago, listen, when you win, you're going to lose players early, you're going to lose coaches early, but you're going to attract people that maybe the average fan wouldn't have thought about. That fan wouldn't have thought about Bo Pelini Wednesday or Thursday, you know, when Dave Aranda looked as though he was going to take that job at Baylor. I do know one thing. Bo Pelini is a four-man front guy, and that's Coach O's wheelhouse. He likes that four-man front. Your thoughts on the possibility of Bo Pelini coming to LSU as a defensive coordinator?
Well, yeah, that's kind of the big thing, the 4-3 versus 3-4. You know, Dave Aranda was obviously the 3-4 guy, and they had done that. You know, Les Miles had run a 4-3 for a long time, hired Dave to come in and change it in 2016, and slowly they did that. But you're right, you know, those defenses, you remember at USC that Ed Orgeron captained that D-line, that was always a 4-3 unit. And it sure seems to me like they're going to move in that direction. And obviously Bo is that guy. He's a splashy kind of name. He's had some difficulties lately at Youngstown. You know, he got off to a good start there, and then they've struggled. So you wonder if it's now time for him to jump back in to a big-time D.C. role. And I'll be honest, you know, this morning, that was a name I heard, you know, and I know it's only come out this afternoon and stuff, but it is certainly a name along with a few others that I've heard, but it's the biggest name, you know, and it makes a lot of sense.
Ross, thanks so much for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it. I'll give you one tip from Coco Ogeron. She said, make sure you tell Bebe I wear a size 8 ring. I want a national championship ring. I wear a size 8.
Well, I know Miss Coco is getting the damn ring. I can tell you
that. I know that. So she's already made that statement. Size 8, she knows it. So she will get it for him. So, Ross, thanks so much. You do some great work at Sports Illustrated, and we really appreciate it in what you do. And a lot of inside information, a lot of hard work goes into that.
Thank you, Ross.
Thanks, y'all. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. Ross Dellinger works for Sports Illustrated now as a feature writer for him. We'll be back with more Second Guess right after this break on the Big 870. The Second Guess Show. Mike DeTeglia, Bobby Hebert live from the Silver Slipper Casino Beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. Bob, one of the things, going back to the 49ers Chiefs, is how they built. And you look along at the running back position, Mostert, you know, he was a free agent. Matt Breida, free agent. And they paid big money for Tevin Coleman, but how they have done it and who gets the hot hand, that's who Shanahan's going to give the ball to. It doesn't matter who's getting paid the most. Kyle is going to kind of ride the horse that's going to take him there that week, and how Raheem has been the guy the last couple weeks. But really, when they signed Tevin Coleman, he was supposed to be the guy.
Right.
He was supposed to be the guy.
And now, Mike, he's hurt. He's not available to Super Bowl. No. His shoulder's all separated, his shoulder.
So now it's going to be Mostert and Breida.
Right. But
all three of them, man, the speed element.
Yeah.
Of once that line can open up a hole, their ability to hit top gear, and then they off to the races.
I want to say one game, the Saints lost to the Falcons one time in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. I want to say Coleman had like 170-some yards total offense. It was one game how they utilized them. And
instead of Freeman, because normally they would ride
Devontae Freeman, that he had that special game. I got to look up, but it was one game I'm just – trying to recollect that, boy, he had an explosive game that you wouldn't necessarily expect that. Now, Mike, how about this? You wouldn't expect this. Going on the Chiefs side. Now, you know, we talked about this, 100 years of NFL football. You look at the team, that being the Chiefs, lost to the Green Bay Packers in the very first Super Bowl. And their owner, Lamar Hunt, came up with the name Super Bowl. So look at the Chiefs. It just stands to reason. It's a good omen if you're a Chiefs fan. 100 years, Lamar Hunt, the owner, came up with the name Super Bowl, played in the first Super Bowl, and now they return 3 years. Then they return after that first Super Bowl. They return 3 years after in 1970 to win their first NFL championship right there in Tulane Stadium when they beat the Vikings. Hank Stram. Remember, Hank Stram was mic'd up and they beat the Vikings? Now, what's interesting, you were talking about home field advantage, and if you're a Chiefs fan, I thought this was crazy. Because the Chiefs is the loudest stadium. You know, you can look outside, you look like the Superdome, Arrowhead Stadium, then you look at Seattle, the Seahawks and all that. The stat that stuck out the most, do you know, is the Chiefs' home playoff record? And you think, oh, well, we have the loud crowd and all that. The Chiefs are 3-8 at home since the victory over the Vikings in 1970. So when they beat the Vikings in the Super Bowl with Hank Stram, they played 11 playoff games at home and they only won three. You know, I'm telling you, the bottom line is you got to get hot and it doesn't matter. So I don't care if we got damn home field advantage next year. We got to be, because we've been road warriors. We got to win on the road. So, Mike, right then, I'm looking at the Chiefs. Oh, the crowd in the playoffs. Since 1970, they're 3-8. So the bottom line, look at the Titans. When they're road warriors, now they went to New England, they went to Baltimore. The bottom line is you just got to win no matter where you played and be hot in December to close out the season come playoff time.
You know, one of the things, I'll never forget Hank Stram telling me that they lost. It was at one time the longest game ever.
Against the Dolphins.
And he said, you know, the crazy part about it, Lenny.
It was on Christmas Eve, I remember.
It was Christmas Day. And so he said, you know, Lenny was getting up in age. But he said the crazy thing is Jan Stenerud, the greatest kicker of that time, he missed two makeable field goals that would have won it in regulation that Jan missed. And he said, you know, I think about it, would it change the trajectory of the Chiefs? We would have played the Cowboys that year in the Super Bowl. We had the experience. We had a very talented team. The Cowboys had been a team known not for win the big game.
Is that when the Dolphins lost 24?
That's when they got beat up pretty good.
24-3. Yeah, because I was a Dolphins fan because, you know, I hate the Cowgirls, and they were waving white handkerchiefs. So I'm waving the white handkerchief. I remember that Christmas Eve game.
Yeah.
We're at my aunt Sharon, my Uncle Harry's house, and I'm watching it. The longest game, the Chiefs had a running back, Ed Podolak.
From
I
Iowa.
Mean, number 14. I never forget this. And you know what I'm going to tie this into? I played in the longest professional football game ever. We beat that record between the Chiefs and the Dolphins in 1984 against the L.A. Express and Steve Young. The game lasted 7.5 quarters. Again, we had Nobo Vojovic, our Serb kicker. He was making all kind of kicks. He missed two easy field goals. Mel Gray, who ended up playing with the Saints, they give him. He ran a 30-yard draw play for a touchdown, got hit, and broke his arm. I never get Mel Gray, the kick returner. You know what the Saints? Purdue, another Purdue running back. It was the longest game in professional football history in 1984. Beat that record between the Chiefs and the Dolphins.
We'll be back
Man,
with
I ain't got hit in the head that many
Second
times.
Second guess right still, after this break.
My wife says seven. I can't remember last week, but I can remember stuff that's ridiculous.
We're finishing it up here on the Second Guest Show. Mike DeTellier, Bobby Hebert, and then after this, we'll go to CBS Sports Network. But I'll end it with this, and one of the most impressive stories you will hear in a long time. In fact, I introduced this lady to Bobby a few weeks back. We were doing television, and the Nicholls State University track and field coach, also the cross-country coach, is Stephanie Slikas. And she finished fifth in the Louisiana Marathon this weekend. You might say fifth. She was 8 months pregnant. 8 months pregnant and finished fifth.
She could have had the baby on the course. Yeah, that's unbelievable.
She qualified for the U.S. Olympic trials, but here's the catch. It's the same week she's due to give birth.
Whoa.
But think about that. You are carting an eight-month-old child, so to speak, and you finish fifth. Just think if you finish sixth, seventh, and eighth, well, who beat you? See that pregnant lady right there? That's the lady that beat me. Man,
right.
Man, listen, Stephanie, I always admire you. But to do that 8 months pregnant is remarkable. Finishing
that's
fifth.
Like having a heavy backpack in the front and running a marathon. Like, what? Come on. That's like, that's unbelievable.
That, and so congratulations to her. This is going to be her second child, but she can't run in the Olympic trials, as she explained it to me. We had done a big show on it because she had qualified, but it being the same week she's having her second child, she won't be able to run for the qualifying events. But just a remarkable effort by Stephanie.
Well,
did
anybody do a story on her? Or what? Somebody needs to.
Somebody should.
Yeah,
I mean,
yes.
Because that is really something else, to finish fifth overall. And, you know, listen, the minimum, most women, it was like 22, 24 pounds minimum.
The great feat of extraordinary human feat, that should get some kind of recognition.
Finish it up for us tonight.
All right, bon nuit, les gens. Good night, people. Who dat? Go Tigers!
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.